Mr. Edwards, reel 8. Now, we've got to the point where you were on the Basse-Laperriere Ridge. Oh, this is the 6th of August, and firing into the smoke screen, basically trying...
Yeah, well, that's all we did. We just fired into the smoke screen until it went dark, and then we were pulled back into Lager. But as we moved back a short way, as we moved back, there was all these burning vehicles all around. There were trucks and tanks and all sorts around on fire. Anyway, we leaguered up, and I remember the German artillery was coming over and sort of over the top of us and dropping one side, and our artillery was coming over and dropping on the other side of us. And when it went quiet, we could hear tanks moving, and we used to hear tigers on the move. Anyway, when I've read about it afterwards, I believe tigers were on the move. They were on the move trying to pick up their own wounded. Anyway, that was it for we stayed there the night. The next morning, before it was light, we were moving out into defensive positions. And it was thick mist. You couldn't see more than about 10 or 20 yards in front of you. So it was very eerie. So we were moving into position without being able to see much of what was going on. Anyway,
this was back up onto the Laperriere Ridge. Yeah,
in that area, yeah. This was the 7th of August. When the mist cleared and the sun came out, we could see that we had behind us were some infantry dug in, with one of their dead comrades laid out on the grass, waiting to be buried. There was a knocked out tank not far away. Wilco, Corporal Whatmouse, saw what he said. Oh, I can see a jerry. So I gave him the Sten gun, and he potted at this jerry. But then he said, oh no, he's throwing mud and things up in the air. I think he must be wounded. So he stopped shooting at him. But we just put the Sten gun away when he said, some bugger's potting at me. Give me a hand grenade. So I gave him a hand grenade. And I gave him the hand grenade, and then Wilco said, bloody hell. So driver advance. Smoke. So I fired two rounds rapid off the smoke gun, which I was very good at that. And he said, not that bloody smoke, hand grenade, smoke grenade. So I gave him a couple of smoke grenades, which he lobbed over. Driver advance. We advanced and couldn't... I can't see Jack guiding, well, I couldn't see, but I'd seen the troop sergeant go to the right, so I said, driver right, and he was saying, commander came on and said, driver left, and I was saying, driver right, and we zigzagged through this smoke, and after a bit he found what he thought was a safer position. What had happened was, a tank, not many yards away, the other side of the edge, had gone up in flames, and... He thought we'd be probably the next one. Anyway, he manoeuvred us into a better position. And this tiger had, or two tigers, and they call it Tiger Hill, found a position where they could knock our tanks out. They brewed five of our tanks. As the sun, you know, as the mist was lifting, they could see them in the shining and sunshine. So they knocked out five of our tanks. So... Sergeant, one of our sergeants, can't think of his name now.
You mentioned Truscott, not him.
No. I'd have to look it up after. Sergeant, he was a Scottish sergeant, he manoeuvred his firefly into position to fire back. One of the tigers put an HE into the tree above him and killed him. What was his name? I thought it started with a B. Anyway, killed the sergeant and wounded his gunner with this HE, so that was the end of that. I think the colonel came on to the Major Gilmore and said, can you do anything about these tigers? And so Major Gilmore took himself, his own tank and the troop, and manoeuvred them around, which I think was through some enemy positions, to get there into a position where he could shoot, and they killed one of the tigers.
But you didn't go with him?
No, we weren't with him. And that's the main thing I can remember about that morning. The rest of the day we just stayed put and we were mortared. Every now and then they showered us with mortars.
What was it like under that?
Well, just terrific noise, and the tank used to lean over on its springs with the blast and then spring back. But in the tank it was all right. I thought, apart from a direct hit, it's no bother, but if anybody outside the tank, it's got to help them, you see.
So what was your own state of nerves like? You know, because you're quite a lot of fighting this.
Well, I can't remember exactly. Anxiety was the main thing, because you're always so frightened of them sneaking up on you without seeing us. I was forever searching through the periscope, although I haven't got a very good view through the periscope. I was forever searching in case I could see anything creeping up on us. And also there's all the feeling that I used to look at the tank and imagine a shell coming straight through us or something like that. I mean, it wasn't pleasant.
Did you worry about being able to get out?
Yes, because I mean, there's so many people got badly burnt in tanks. Next to me was in the turret was a large Kiddy-Lux fire extinguisher, and I used to practice grabbing it, so I was really quick on the draw with the fire extinguisher. And I thought, if the thing goes up in flames, I'll have to try and fight my way out with that, because to get out, I had to crawl under the gun to get gun shield to get out. Which would take a while.
Did it get worse, you know, as you went on? Or did you?
Not really, no.
Stayed about the same?
About the same, just this anxiety. Always anxiety, and always the worry that in an emergency, would I do the right thing?
Do you think having a nervous tank commander didn't help?
It didn't, because he was very nervy.
You didn't look down on him for that, though?
Oh, no, I mean, I could understand it, because, I mean, being a tank commander wasn't the nicest job, because you had to stick your head out and get shot at with all sorts of snipers or mortar fire and everything else. So it was a dangerous job, and, of course, you got the responsibility of trying to do the right thing.
What about the rest of you, you know, Forbes and Pember, how were they?
Well, Forbes wasn't with us, and we've got a new chap called Vic Holden.
Vic Holden,
yeah.
Holden with an H.
Yeah. So he was our new driver. The rest of them, well, they seemed all right. I mean, Cliff at Pembroke, I think he smoked, so he'd have a smoke, I suppose. And Pat Kettridge was a brave type, so I suppose he'd be all right.
And what about Vic Holden? What was he like?
Well, to me, it wasn't very soldierly, because he had a Sten gun, but he didn't want it, so he gave it me, and that. So I had the butts sawn off so that it would fit in a clip in the turret, which was made it handy for the tank commander when he wanted a Sten gun.
And other than that, what about Vic? What sort of chap was he? Was he friendly?
Oh, he was friendly enough. He was a nice chap, but he wasn't a very soldierly type.
And Kettridge what was Kettridge doing at the time for you?
He was a gunner. Oh, he was a good sort, yeah. He was a sort of leader of men type. And he had been the tank commander of ours for a couple of days when the commander got wounded at Epsom.
So, you were all a friendly crew?
We were all friendly and got on well.
Okay, so what's the next thing? Is you'd had this bit of a nightmare on the Perrier Ridge, on the fire from the Tigers, and then the mortar fire. What happened next? And this is all on the 7th?
This is on the 7th. Well, we just got mortared all day, and we leaguered that night, and
Did you go back again? Or did you stay up on the ridge?
Well, we're on the ledge. We used to just pull back from our position wherever we were. And the supply column, A echelon, came and joined us. And Sergeant Major, who was in charge of it, his name just escapes me, but I know it well. He came along the line of tanks to see who we knew and who was still here. And he saw me, and I had a really growth of beard. I hadn't shaved for days. And he says, Edward, you'll be needing a shave soon, he says, which I thought was a very understatement for a sergeant major. Anyway, I did get a shave the next day. The next day was the 8th of August, and we got into our position, our defensive positions again, and we were mortared again. But anyway, in the afternoon, the Scots Greys arrived to take over from us. And the artillery had put down a 10-minute smoke screen around the Bursey area, around that exposed road at Bursey, so that the Scots Greys could come into us. And then when we were ready to move, they put another 10-minute smoke screen down so that we could get out up that exposed road again. So we pulled back about 3 or 4 miles, well to the north of Bursey, parked in the field, and...
That looks like it might be Laquille.
Just parked in the field and relaxed, and it was bliss. And we were there about 3 days, I think.
It's got quite a lot of reinforcements again, a lot from the 24th Lancers.
Well, we got them from the 24th Lancers and the 2nd Lothian and Border Horse.
How did they fit in? I mean, what did you notice, really?
Well, we did, on our tank we didn't, so I can't remember. We were there relaxing for a few days, and I remember I got a bath in a stream. There was a stream, and there was a deep part of the stream where some artillery man had put some steel ammunition boxes, and he put one upside down to sit on, two the right way up that you put your feet in, and you could sit on this ammunition box with your feet in the two empty ammunition boxes, and then give yourself a bath. And it was very refreshing, especially in the hot weather. The first bath I'd had for a month or more, and it was very refreshing. I remember that well. And of course, Somebody said, oh, the farmer's daughter will be peeping from behind the edge, but I think it was a bit of wishful thinking, that, because I don't think the farmer's daughter was anywhere near. Anyway, on the 12th, we were there a few days, and on the 12th, we moved in the night a few miles east to take over from the 15th Scottish Division, take over sector from them. They must have been going back into reserve for a bit. And we spent the next day, the 13th, just sitting in this field. While we were in this field on the 13th, the troop leader came, Mr. Dark, and he took our gunner, Trooper Kettridge, away from us and made him a corporal and gave him a command of a tank. So we acquired a new gunner, a stranger, one of these reinforcements.
You don't know what his name was. You'd only be with him a few days, wouldn't you?
Well, not long. I can't remember his name. He was only young, like about 19 or 20. He was quite a new soldier. That was on the 13th. The next day, the 14th, we advanced. Now, the enemy was supposedly waiting.
Was this still all part of Blue Coat?
No, this was, I don't know what this was called. This was later, after Blue Coat.
So this was the advance towards Lassie, La Roque, Vassy.
That's correct, yeah. Well, as we set off, we were told that the enemy was waiting for us 4 miles ahead at about Lassie. So we set off along the road, Mr. Dart leading, we were second tank. And as we were going along, I could see in the fields to the side of us our dead men from the 15th Scottish, who were still lying about from the recent operations. And about another half mile or so, and there was a couple of knocked out Churchill tanks and some more of our dead lying about. And it used to give me a funny feeling seeing our dead lying about, because I used to cast my mind back to the moment when they were shot down and think what would they be thinking at the time. Anyway, we passed the, we'd done about a mile or so up the road when Mr. Dark hit a mine. So he left his tank and came and took over ours, and we carried on advancing, but we'd only done a few hundred yards when a terrific bang, and the inside of the tank went dark with suspended dust came out of every crevice and you couldn't see across the tank, and Mr. Dart was saying, reporting he'd hit a mine again. So he left us to take over yet another tank, and then the column then left the road. They decided to try cross country, so they left the road and they all went cross country. It was the squadron plus a company of the 8th RB in the carriers and half tracks following them.
Now what happened to you that had run over the mine?
Well, we got out to have a look, and the track was broken, and a complete suspension unit had been blown off the side of the tank, and the 8 bolts that secured it had sheared off and shot back inside the tank, and they'd hurt the ankle of the driver, given a rattle against his ankle on inside the tank. And the suspension unit, not only had been blown off, it had been blown about 5 or 6 yards away, and it had wrecked a 5-bar gate. Anyway, we got nothing we could do, so we put the stove down, got the stove out, and started boiled some water for a brew. And while we were doing that, two Royal Engineers like chaps came up the road looking for mines. And when they got to our tank, they said, "Oh, must have been 2 mines, that one on top of the other, to do that damage." Anyway, they said, "Oh, just shift your stove a minute." So we shifted the stove and they dug a mine up from where the stove was. there was lots of them around. So we just sat there, and during the morning, the recovery vehicle, ARV, arrived. That's a Sherman without a top on. And they had a tow bar arrangement, and they towed us back somewhere back up the road, and parked us on the driveway of a house, a sort of driveway. It wasn't a proper driveway, of a house, which was deserted, and just left us there for 2 days. That was the 14th. And on the 16th, the fitters came back and with a new suspension unit, fastened it back on, helped us fasten the track on, and we went back up to join the unit. We joined them in the evening in time to league up with them. They were about, must have been about 50 miles ahead up, somewhere up ahead.
How far?
Maybe about 15 miles, I guess, but I don't know exactly.
So you rejoined the unit on the 16th?
The evening of the afternoon or evening of the 16th. We joined them in time to league it up. I was on rover guard, and a stranger was on guard with me, and I was roving around, and he said, "You're a miserable sod." He said, "Why don't you stand and have a chatter?" Anyway, I wasn't good at standing and have a chatter, but I was very good at guarding, so I carried on roving, and he stood around.
Well, tell me more about what was a roving guard.
Well, he just kept moving around amongst the vehicles, you see, hopefully to stop anybody sneaking up on the vehicles.
That must have been quite nerve-wracking.
Well, it wasn't that. It wasn't night. I was quite good at it. I used to move and keep in the shadows and move now and then and stay in the shadows as much as possible. I was happy doing the job. Anyway, the next morning we set off, and we found some American unit was trying to use the same road as us, so some higher authority decided the Americans could use it in the morning and we would have it in the afternoon. So we sat in a field in the morning, had a good breakfast of eggs from the farm and some bacon from a tin of American bacon that we'd found in the hedge. So we had a good breakfast, and then in the afternoon we moved along this road for some distance, but then we were stopped because the REs were putting a scissor bridge across the river. It took them a while. I think they had to do a lot of bulldozing on the banks to get the bridge over.
Would this be the River Rui, or?
Could have been. I don't know the name of the river, and I couldn't find it on the map. Anyway, they got the bridge over, and the infantry went over, and I think it was evening when we went over, late evening when we went over, and the infantry were digging in amongst a line of rocks. And they were being mortared, and the squadron was told to go forward. What exactly the orders were, I can't remember. But we moved forward, I was supposed to try and stop this mortaring. We moved forward about a few hundred yards. Oh, I forgot that that morning, the troop leader came and he took our commander, Corporal Watmore, off us and relegated him to a another crew, not a commander. And he gave us a new commander, Lieutenant Munro, who was a reinforcement from the 2nd Lothian and Border Horse.
Munro.
Lieutenant Munro.
What was he like? Any impression of him? I know you were only there a day or so.
Well, he was all right. He was confident and he looked round the tank and he saw where I got this Sten gun in the clip and he said, oh, that's a good thing. And he was quite happy. Anyway, that morning also, I forgot, we went through the, what's the town? My memory is hopeless.
Bunkerley?
No, quite a large town. Flers, F-L-E-R-S. We went through there in the morning. And I saw people, which was the first time I'd seen people in Normandy, lots of people, and they were cheering, and they looked well-dressed, and they were cheering. And I thought, oh, that's a pleasant sight. Anyway, we moved out of Flers, heading east, and that was when we met up with this road where we couldn't use, because of the Americans anyway, we could use the road in the afternoon. We held up while they did the scissor bridge. In the evening we went over, that's right. And the infantry were being mortared, and we were told to advance, and we did. We'd done about 400 yards, or maybe 500 yards, and Lieutenant Munro was in command. And he headed towards a gap in the hedge. And there was a big explosion in front of us. So he backed us off a bit, and then he machine gunned the hedge on both sides of the gap. So he did a lot of machine gunning. Then he backed us off, went farther along the hedge to the left. And then he started moving towards the hedge again, but a voice said, I don't know if it was a troop leader or some other officer, said, warned him that he was getting too near the hedge, you ought to come away from that hedge. Well, you're always in danger of bazookas if you're dawdling about near the hedge. Anyway, so he went in reverse, so he started reversing. Of course, you can only reverse slowly, and we weren't reversing back away from the hedge, we were sort of at an angle. So we weren't getting very far away from the edge, if you get me. And I was looking through the periscope, seeing what I could see. And there was a big explosion behind me, somewhere in the back of the tank. So I turned around and I thought the turret seemed to be full of flames. So I did me a very quick draw on the Kiddelux fire extinguisher and started spraying in the direction of where the flames were coming from. And they eased off, amazing. I was amazed that they eased off somewhat. I think they were coming through the engine bulkhead. They eased off somewhat. And I had a look round and all the crew had disappeared except for Mr. Munro, Lieutenant Munro, who was sort of slumped over the gunner's seat, back of the gunner's seat. And I leaned over to have a look at him and I thought, well, he must be dead because his blood was spattered all over the gun shield. But his neck, he had a big hole through his neck, it wasn't bleeding, so I thought, well, if it's not bleeding now, he must be dead. So I wriggled through, the turret happened to be in the right direction, so I could wriggle through into the driver's seat. And I started reversing, whether the engine was still running or not, I can't remember, but I know I started reversing. I thought I'll try and get a bit farther away from the edge before I get out. But anyway, Taffy Pember was outside. Shout, stop, stop. I could hear him shouting, stop. So I stopped and he said, Vic, that's the driver, Vic's hurt and you're taking the tank away from him. He said, we've been shot at when as they bailed out. So, and he said, get out anyway because the tank's on fire, so I thought, which I knew. Anyway, so I said, 1, 2, 3, and I shot out like a streak of lightning onto the ground outside. And I looked around and I felt quite annoyed when I got out because our tank was there on its own and the rest of the troop was about 100 yards or more behind us, and we were there poking about on this hostile edge all on our own.
You had been hit by bazookas, shall I? Had you panned?
Well, I don't know. I guessed something had hit us at the back of the rear end of the tank and set I thought the engine, the back end of the tank was on fire.
So you don't really know what it was, but no, you thought it was a panzer.
I guessed it was a bazooka. Anyway, So there's Taffy, myself behind the tank, and Vic Holden lying on the ground. So I was annoyed that we were there on our own, and then I was also annoyed at him lying there pretending to be badly hurt, because I thought I couldn't see any blood coming out of him. And I was annoyed at myself because I thought if I'd have just thought on, I could have brought some smoke grenades or something out from behind, you know, because we had no chance of escaping from the tank. Anyway, Taffy said, let's have a look at Vic. So I got Vic's dressing out of his field dressing out of his pocket, and between us we started taking his jacket off, and we got his jacket half off, and we still couldn't see any sign of blood. But anyway, just then there was a long burst of machine gun fire came under the tank. Vic shouts, Margaret, darling, I love you, goodbye. And I said, Taffy, they've got me in the legs. And he said, they've got me in the legs as well. So he'd been shot in the body, we'd been shot in our legs.
How bad were the wounds, or did you not know at the time? Was it just one wound?
No, lots of wounds over both legs. They weren't bullet holes, they were sort of ricochets and all sorts of bits of rock knocked, shot up from the ground and all sorts. So legs were riddled with all sorts, and there was wounds all over them. Anyway, I sat down with my back to one of the bogies, and I still had this field dressing in my hand, so I wrapped it. There's actually two dressings in one. So I used one on the worst dressing on one leg, one on the worst wound on one leg, and one on the worst wound on the other leg. But then, while I'm doing this, the troop Firefly arrived nearby and stopped nearby, and the sergeant said, get on the back of my tank. So I thought, well, we haven't got a lot of chance of that. And he no sooner said it when I saw something come over from behind the edge, whether it was a bazooka or what, I don't know, but something shot over, and it just missed the front of the Firefly, and it exploded in the space, somewhere in the space between the Firefly and us. Terrific bang. And the Firefly went smartly into reverse and got out of it. And this exploded, it shot up a big cloud of smoke and dust. And Vic Holden was lying on the ground. He in a most piercing scream, and he came completely off the ground, 10 feet in the air, completely off the ground, and then dropped back again. And I saw this cloud of smoke and dust, and I thought, that'll give us cover. So I said, come on, Taff. And we both staggered to, there were some rocks about 25 yards away, so not very big ones, but we dropped behind them, staggered to them, dropped behind them, and then started to crawl to the other side of the field. It wasn't a very big field.
So you left Holden behind, or was he dead, would you?
Well, I just presumed he's either dead or too far gone to worry about, and at the time, all I could see was smoke and dust and cover. All right, let's get out of it.